Hello and welcome to the Anything But Quiet Time podcast. We are Rochelle and Carter, and if you are just joining us, first of all, we're on video now, so you can text the word quiet to the number 893-893 to get to our channel and like and subscribe it. We've also started this feature.
No, see, I wanted to get the most out of this camera time, Carter.
This is our podcast.
No, it is our podcast.
And you have made the investment to continue wearing and buying cheesy Christian shirts.
And this is why I made a big deal about it not being we. Because I found out a long time ago when Carter and I would, our families buy each other gifts for birthdays and stuff. I've been wanting to get you like emblem shirts, logo shirts. You're very particular about that kind of stuff. So you would never, ever.
No, I would not wear this.
Wear this shirt.
No. But alas, we're at another one.
And you like it.
And it is.
It's super cheesy, but you like
this. This one's better than some of the ones that you've had.
Okay. Wait, what other ones did you not like?
I told you I hated the mosquito. I don't trust him. Remember that?
I mean, I was wearing it and I didn't even like it.
Right.
All right, yeah. You ready? So this one says, Jesus, he'll be there for you.
And it's in the Friends show Friends font.
Yeah.
There it is.
There it is.
There it is. I think you would get some compliments on this one in public. I do.
It's got the font and it's got the little dots that you see in between the letters for Friends, but it's in between the letters for Jesus.
That's great.
It is great. At one point, apparently my hair was covering part of it, and a friend of mine thought that it might have said a bad word.
Oh, great.
So that, I mean, you got to be careful with that kind of stuff, too.
Yeah. You've set yourself up for all of this. So any criticism that comes your way. No, also, if there's anything that you want to discuss, if you're listening and you're like, man, you guys touched on this, but if you want to get more into it or even a question about what we've said before, always leave a comment on any one of the videos that you watch. And we check those. We'd love to discuss anything that you want to discuss. I think since this is out on September 11th, I think worthwhile to, it's always interesting to revisit that day that so many, I know there's a lot of, people in their low 20s and teens now that don't remember it, but about everybody else remembers where they were, what they were doing when that moment happened. What were you doing that day?
I was upstairs. I still lived with my parents, but I was an adult. I paid rent for the upstairs.
Oh, very nice.
And I think my dad shouted at me from the downstairs, Rochelle, turn the TV on, turn it on the Today Show. And at that time, I had a job in radio. And so before I went to work at the tallest building in Tulsa, Oklahoma, which is Cityplex Towers at the time, I went and got in line to get gasoline at the gas station.
Long lines, right?
And I know this is going to sound ridiculous, but it was like up to maybe $1.30-ish, if I'm remembering that correctly, which was insane. It's going to rise. It's going to rise and rise and rise. Everybody kept saying, and we're like, oh, my word. So this huge, huge line in waiting to get gasoline because we weren't sure, if the sky was falling or just what was going on. And so then I got to work, and it was one of those certainly the first time on the air that I had dealt with loving on people in the midst of tragedy, but nobody had seen tragedy like this on our doorstep before. It wasn't a natural disaster. It was a terrorist bombing. I mean, Oklahoma City bombing was horrible, and I lived in Oklahoma, but I wasn't on the air at that point. And this was clearly, in terms of numbers, there were so many more lost.
Well, and so those iconic buildings that you've seen for, I can't remember when the Pentagon was built, but certainly the Twin Towers built in the 60s or 70s or whatever.
The huge tall buildings. And I do believe, if I'm not mistaken, all tall buildings were put on alert. Mm. So you were that tall building.
Yeah.
And it was just...
It's surreal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw the second plane crash. It just, yeah.
Yeah. You still kind of, when you revisit the footage, you still never quite get over it. It's just that
it's almost
sinking
like watching
feeling.
A movie that you've already seen before and you keep hoping that it swerves a little or like just misses or maybe he'll learn this time or whatever it is you're watching in the movie. It's a movie. It's already happened. Or in this case, it's history.
I was in sixth grade and we had gym class first hour. So when we get back to our homeroom, our teacher just, blurted it out. Hey, a plane flew into the World Trade Center and the Pentagon's on fire. Because at that time, I guess they didn't know it was a plane there too. And we were just like, what? I mean, and she turned on the TV for a minute, but the principal decided that wasn't a good idea. Mm. Middle schools and high schools were, a lot of them were watching in class.
But you were still so young.
But we were in sixth grade. I regretted that for a long time. As I've become a parent, I wonder if she did the right thing. I was pretty mad about that in the next couple of years of, like, you had all these, you know, ninth and 10th and 12th graders watching history.
Yeah.
And we didn't, we were just sheltered and didn't really know what was going on the rest of the day.
I think at that point, I've heard it said that especially with our phone, which, I mean, we weren't even close to that kind of technology mm-hmm. when it happened. But we have access to so much footage. And mm-hmm. I've heard psychologists kind of, we have too much information, too much footage, and our brains can't keep up with everything that we're seeing, let alone our children. I do regret in Houston in 2017, my kids are sitting watching live the effects of Harvey, and I remember this one woman, she was caught on camera in the middle of a highway, and they sent people out to save her, and she was clutching the median in the middle of the highway. And she was just clutching for everything she had. They sent out people on this boat, which was super risky. And when they arrived to get her, she pushed them away. She was in such a state where she, I don't know what she was thinking. I'm sure she passed because she refused. She couldn't let go of that median. And my kids, I mean, you're watching a rescue is what you're thinking.
Yeah.
And they ended up seeing a woman resist rescuing and they were small.
And it's, what do you do with that? With, you want your kids to understand the risks that are out there and the things that can happen, but at what age and in what way do you bring them to that and take away their innocence? In you know, the world's eventually going to do it.
It's probably what your teacher was thinking.
Yeah.
Is this my place? They have parents.
Sure. Yeah. And in high school, that doesn't seem as big of a deal. But yeah, and it was just obviously an eerie day. But I think some interesting stories that came out of that, you know, the thing that we even got to talk to a couple that was engaged later because they met on September 11th on these flights that got detoured to Canada. And if you've never heard the story about that, this little town of like 3,000 or 5,000 people hosted like 1,000 people of all these planes that landed. And they just treat, I mean, if you've ever wondered how to serve people and how to be hospitable, that was exhibit A right there.
We got to talk to a couple that literally found each other and got married.
Uh-huh, yep.
After they had met there, right?
They met on, I think they were on the same plane, if I'm not mistaken. And then they're still together.
They were in two different countries, but after that, they got married. And
that's a pretty cool part of that, certainly. But anyways, it's interesting. Hey, if you want to comment too on what you were doing that day, it's always interesting hearing people's perspectives as well as perspectives on quiet time and such.
So I was privy to this incredible message on Sunday. And some of the things that stood out, I like to take notes because number one, it may look like I'm she's super Bible nerd, biblical lady or something. I don't know why I didn't do this more in high school and college. And everybody tells you, take notes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No, I'll just remember.
Yeah.
No,
right.
I didn't. And I clearly can't do that today now that I'm that much older. But also it just helps me, I don't know, it helps me keep up. It helps me, oh my word, I never thought of it that way. Let me write it down.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I do model that with my kids. And every once in a while, my oldest will pick up his journal and I'll see him now taking notes. And so hopefully they don't just quite, you know, maybe my youngest will finally pick it up and won't think that he'll just remember, because one of these days he won't just remember.
And
but
I agree with that sentiment. And I wonder if I should start writing things down just for the practice of writing things down. But what I've done it before.
So that you don't forget what it feels like to hold a pen as opposed
there's that too, right? There's that too. But I get, you know, not journaling. I'm talking about taking notes. I'll never use them again. I'll never go back and look at them.
Oh, yeah.
And then also, if I do, I won't know what that was even in reference to because I'm trying to keep up with the pastor.
Sure, sure.
And so I don't. I'll make like what if it's one line that's really good and I want to share fine. Or whatever, I'll do it on my phone. And no, I know there's no right or wrong answer.
Right.
I'm just contemplating on like, if I just write it, even if I throw the notes away, will it help me remember it better?
I used to have a pastor who he knew what his message was going to be about and he would leave blanks. In the program, he would have a template, the outline of his message, and he would have a fill-in-the-blank.
Oh, for the crowd?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And I had never experienced that in the church that I grew up in. And as I got older, I was like, well, that's genius.
Yeah, that's true.
But so the message was out of Mark 5, and it's this incredible moment where Jesus is in the middle of helping somebody else with their miracle when a woman reaches out for hers. And it was just some of the things that I'd never really stopped to ponder. The fact that the woman who bled for 12 years, hemorrhaged for 12 years, and then is called daughter by the Son of God, who has then made it clear to everybody who's listening, she's part of our family, she's part of the kingdom, and she touched the only person that she would be able to touch without making them unclean. And I'm going to make her clean because she touched me. And it was more than that. So those are the things that I've kind of picked up on my own for the most part. But some of the things that were shared were just so good. For instance, this woman, she had spent 12 years bleeding. When we say a business is hemorrhaging, we're talking about its life's blood, right? And so to be able to associate that or translate that over into an issue that maybe you're experiencing, an area that you have tried and tried to fix, and it just doesn't get help, you can clearly now connect to this woman. She spent all her money on all these doctors, and her expectation, you go to the doctor, you don't feel good. There's an expectation there that you're going to find out what's going to make you better.
Right.
You're going to know what's wrong, and nothing worked. So her expectations now are bottom of the barrel. And now her money is all gone. And then there was the, just think about this for a moment, the people closest to you, it feels like because of her status in the society, in their culture, if a woman is menstruating, there is a set amount of time that you have to stay away from everybody. You are not to socialize. That's a big no-no.
Yeah.
And this woman has been dealing with this issue for 12 years.
She's an untouchable.
She is an untouchable person. And the only way that she would find any solace, potentially, is to move away from the people who knew her best, who knew that she was experiencing this. So she may be a stranger in the crowd because that's the only way that she would even be able to get close enough to Jesus. Otherwise, she would have been shunned, get out. Mm-hmm. Move away. Well, why would you move away from people who know you best? Maybe those people in her life are the ones who have been giving her all the advice, telling her what God can or cannot do for someone like you. We've heard it from other passages of scripture where the disciples, well, did he get his blindness because his parents sinned? What kind of sin did she commit? You know, you can hear all the murmurings, the wonderings. I know in my own life, something happens with a person and you kind of wonder what happened there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kind of curious about that. Well, that kind of stuff, especially if she was unclean, was outed so that other people wouldn't have to go through cleaning rituals and they could continue to go to the synagogue or be around other people, you know, to stay clean. But she went outside of that circle of people who told her who was good enough, who was worthy enough, who was clean enough. And I thought that was a powerful thought. Just so many people tell you your worth, or so many people tell you you're not good enough, or you don't match what the church says you need to be. And when I say the church, I'm talking about somebody who's preaching falsehoods, somebody who's preaching heresy. You need to be a certain way before God can help you. But she's at her worst. And when she comes to him, she comes in the most humble position on all fours because she touches the tassels of his garment, the hem of his garment. And that also it makes you think about the way that God might usher in a healing, a help to your life. And it's not necessarily presented on a red velvet pillow. there may be some humbling of what you thought it should look like.
Yeah.
You know, it was just a really blessed way to look at this incredible story and just be reminded that it's usually a mess that precedes a miracle. And to be encouraged by that, recently went over this psalm this morning, actually. It's Psalm 77. And this is the one, actually, it's featured in a recent episode of The Chosen. It just happened to be today's, where at the beginning of that show, if you're familiar, you see Asaph, who there could have been multiple Asaphs, his descendants, because you look at the some of the people, you find the writer of the psalm generally right before the number of the chapter. And I'm like, how many psalms did this Asaph character write? And it sounds like this guy must have written it post-exile, which is totally a different time frame than David. So I looked it up, and it's like, well, it potentially could have been his children.
Oh, okay.
So that was fascinating. But it's just a crying out loud. It's mournful. It's grieving. It's allowing yourself the emotion of the moment. And it struck me this morning as I've started journaling more than just when I listen to Sunday messages, but my father gave me this book of Psalms, and in the past, if you've listened to our podcast in the past, I've been on those programs where you read through the Bible in a year, and I've done that a few times, and that's been great. It's given you, obviously, timeline and stuff like this, but I'm now able to really kind of chew on it and spend some time on it, and kind of like what you said with when you listen to a sermon, you get like one line from it. You're just really able to... That's the line that God used today in my life. And so when you take a smaller passage and are able to do that, I found it very valuable. All ways to read the Bible are valuable. But it led me to this place of trying to understand the gift of emotion. It's a gift when we grieve. It's a gift when we're happy. But if we linger in any one of those places too long, instead of the strength that we are told that we found only in the joy of the Lord, then we are allowing those things to dictate what our circumstances how those are developing us. I don't know if that's making it clear. If I'm lingering in the grief, then I'm allowing that to dictate who I am. Mm-hmm. If I'm lingering in the happy, then I'm allowing that only to dictate who I am. And not just that, but Carter, if I'm in the midst of something that's chaotic and I'm pretending to be happy, or I'm immune to everybody else's pain, how does that make me a helpful person? Mm. So feelings are there to be instrumental to help guide us as to what people are what I'm feeling. And it's okay because God gave us emotion. But the point is that I do not have to settle into those places of mourning and into those grief. Why? Because if the Israelites had settled in their place of grieving, as it shares in this particular psalm, talking about going through the water that God had parted in the Red Sea, if they had stayed on the side where Pharaoh and his army were coming and charging at them, and they had settled there and what are we going to do? They would never have gone across on dry land to the other side and found freedom. And so it may be a storm that we have to walk through. It may have to be this dark, scary trial and lightnings bursting all around, whatever that would have looked like when the Israelites walked through the Red Sea. But it's not where we're supposed to stay when we feel the emotion. It's the joy of the Lord that is our strength, the knowledge of who he is, what he brings to the table, not what I bring to the table, not my emotion. Feel the pain. Don't pretend it ain't there.
Sure. Yeah.
Because that's not helpful to anybody, neither yourself or anybody around you. But I thought that was Asaph being real to himself in the moment, whatever he was dealing with, it was grievous. But then he comes out on the other side and he talks about walking through the waters. Your lightnings lighted up the world. The earth trembled and shook. Your way was through the sea, not over it. It was through the sea, your path through the great waters. Your footprints weren't seen. So maybe you're wondering, right, where are you, God? Mm. But you led your people like a flock by the hand of Moses and Aaron. And it ends with that.
What it really feels like is that humility and discipline in this culture that we live in is what's lacking, right? Because our emotions drive us so much. I mean, that's within Christianity as well.
Yeah.
You know, and to have that continued, I just watched a documentary, a lot of language, but it was about the Florida Gators when they were really good.
Oh, yeah.
15 years ago.
I saw that on Netflix, but I haven't watched it.
Tim Tebow's in it.
Okay.
Don't let that fool you. There's still a lot of language from the other people. there's actually a pretty funny story about Tim Tebow, too, staying true to himself. But it's just insane what they were doing working out.
Hmm.
It is insane. And I'm sure some people would even say not healthy, but Tim Tebow just loved it. He loved getting in the gym. He loved pushing himself. And I wish I could have the quote, but it was something about, it wasn't just about putting your body through it, but the mental toughness where you have however many pounds on that bench press or whatever. And, you know, in some of the footage they had, you know, people were pushing on him while they were trying to lift and just getting him tough and all that. And he said, you know, it comes down to your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to push through or are you not?
Mm-hmm.
Your body's saying give in, but are you going to?
Yeah.
And Tim Tebow lived for that, to just push through mentally. Now, that's obviously, I'm sure there's, for Tim, that's probably a combination of God giving him the strength and him pushing himself as far as he could go mentally as well as physically. But I think there's that spiritual discipline that we can do mm-hmm. in many situations, not just with our physical, when we're trying to work out, you know, but in everyday life situations of, am I going to push through with the strength that I know that God is the one that pushes me through?
I think it's important to analyze your emotions to some extent, because those are there to signal to you, you know, oh, this toe is hot.
Yep.
Oh, that guy dumped me. That hurt.
Right. You know, right. Yeah.
It signals this is what's going on so that you can process and articulate what's happening, because there's this response that your body gives. Your brain is sometimes playing catch up, or it's filled with lots of thoughts, but you're not expressing them out loud. So I don't know if you've ever done this. An example, when I was a little girl, my mom said, let's go get a donut. I said, okay. So we are in the car, we're driving to the donut place. The moment we get out, for whatever reason, I put my right hand right next to the door and shut it with my left hand, shutting my hand in said door. And it was locked.
Mm.
And I couldn't get it out. And the guy, there was this angel guy who happened to be there. I couldn't articulate the pain. I couldn't, through the pain. Mm-hmm. I was just like, my mom's like, what's going on? And she doesn't know what to do. And she's freaking out. And the guy's like, the door. So thank God it all worked out. But there are times where we go through those types of experiences. And yes, we're getting the signal, something hurts. But people around us, they may be experiencing the, what do you call after a storm or even like an explosion?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I'm talking about? Ground zero? The fallout or whatever. The fallout.
Sure. Yeah. You're sure.
They are experiencing the fallout and they have no idea what bomb just exploded.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you're not articulating it. And if I live there, then they're never going to know. And you know what's more? I'm going to allow myself to live there and I don't even want to figure it out. Now I just have given myself permission to stay there.
Yeah. And that's where I'm not letting scripture guide me.
Exactly.
But yeah. I definitely have stuff to share, but if we're moving on, I definitely want to share that story about Tim Tebow. It's a great
no,
story.
No, because people, what if they want to see the documentary and then your spoiler alert?
You can skip ahead 2 minutes.
It's going to take 2 minutes for this story.
2 minutes, real quick. There was this one guy in the documentary was like captain of the Florida Gators type of guy. He's a junior or senior. He's just the stud when Tim Tebow's coming in as a freshman.
Okay.
And so this guy, like, you know, his picture's in the calendar that they give out. He's on the side of the stadium. He is the head linebacker of the defense.
And my kids would call him the Chad.
The Chad?
Yeah, they have names for guys who are –
like macho?
A macho guy.
Okay.
Oh, he's such a Chad.
And so he is like the guy.
Okay.
And Tim Tebow, little freshman. Now, Tim Tebow was already famous in the college world because he was a big recruit. And everybody wanted to know where he was going to go to college, and he ended up picking the Florida Gators.
Okay.
So as soon as Tim Tebow gets on campus, he calls this guy and says, I want to shadow you. I want to learn everything. And we don't even play the same position. Tim Tebow's on offense. This guy's on defense. But but you're the leader. I see your toughness. I see how far you push yourself and push people.
That's great.
I just want to shadow you and learn from you.
Yeah.
And this guy's, all right.
That's humble.
I'm going to a party, a Friday night. Why don't you come with me? And he's like, I just figured Tim Tebow was going to be a little homeschool Christian kid. Going to finally live a little and break out, you know. So we go to this party. And he's like, first of all, everything that you see about Tim Tebow is true. I had never seen Tim Tebow. He was at this party. I'd never seen him actually party, right? But he said, but I'm sitting there, you know, and I'm feeling myself. Some girls walk up and they're like, are you the guy? And he's like, yeah, baby, I'm the guy. You're the guy that's here with Tim Tebow? And he goes, what the heck? I brought Tim Tebow's with me.
That's right.
He's like, I never invited him again. It's like, that's how popular Tim Tebow already was.
See, that's why you shouldn't be a Chad either. Because the Bible warns you about being a Chad. Pride goes before a fall, baby.
I love how some of what you shared was also not really functional to how we think God should operate. Mm. That this woman that was an outcast, like, God would never want her, you know? I read a story. We actually went over this in Sunday school. I'm even baffled by this. I can't believe this is in the Bible.
What story?
This is a story in Jeremiah.
Okay.
That I've never had anybody. I mean, obviously, I'm reading through Jeremiah. If you're with us over the last few weeks, mm-hmm. and so I've never read through Jeremiah, but I also don't think I've ever heard anybody talk about this. There is this group towards the end that is referenced in one chapter. Mm-hmm. That they are not Christians, if you will. They're not Israel. And God points to Israel or says to Israel, he points to them and goes, you can learn something from them.
Yeah.
And they're called the Rechabites.
Does that sound familiar with the Roman guard that Jesus says, never have I seen such faith?
Yeah.
How many times does God have to point out?
That's another good one.
You think you've arrived.
Yes. Yes. And this is just baffling. There's these Rechabites. They're, again, I guess they'd be pagans, but when some people from Israel meet them, they offer them wine, and the Rechabites do not drink wine because their ancestor, it was just their ancestor, mm-hmm. not their false god, their ancestor told them not to. So they've listened to this. And he says to, God now says to Israel, let me see if I'm in the right part here. Yeah, this is what God says in Israel. Come and learn a lesson about how to obey me. The Rechabites do not drink wine to this day because their ancestor Jehonadab told them not to. But I have spoken to you again and again, and you refuse to obey me. Time after time, I sent prophets to you. Turn from your wicked ways, he goes on. And then God eventually honors them. He says, therefore, then Jeremiah turned to the Rechabites and said, this is what the Lord of heaven's armies, the God of Israel, says. You have obeyed your ancestor Jehonadab in every respect, following all of his instructions. Therefore, this is what the Lord of heaven's armies, the God of Israel, says. Jehonadab, son of Rechab, will always have descendants who serve me. Mm-hmm. This is the only time I think they're mentioned. This is a lesson of God's not saying they have the right God and that every path is right and all of that stuff. He's just saying, look at this principle that they're doing. And I think what we do in this culture is rightfully have apologetics or defend the faith, but never give an inch to any other thing that other religions even do. And I love how it always seemed to me like God is very about Israel and about nobody else mm-hmm. in the Old Testament. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden he's about everybody in the New Testament. Mm-hmm. But if you look closely, he really is inclusive of everybody that will follow him. You just saw it there.
Yeah.
And at the end of 12, which is kind of where the chapters that I'm kind of at right now, and if these nations, this is in verse 16 of chapter 12, if these nations truly learn the ways of my people, so if they follow what Israel is following, if they learn to swear by my name, saying as surely as the Lord lives, as Yahweh lives, just as they taught my people to swear by the name of Baal, then they will be given a place among my people. Mm-hmm. But any nation who refuses to obey me will be uprooted and destroyed. I, the Lord, have spoken.
But if you think about even like going back to the original law, uh-huh. how would they even get to a place of recognizing this pagan people getting close enough to recognize that they may be doing something that they could learn from. Well, if you're a stickler for the law, and if you have somehow latched onto an ideology as opposed to what's true and real, which is something that we are all, I think we are all susceptible to do.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
We get something planted in our brains. In fact, we may be doing it on, like, we're on robot. We do it because everybody else did it.
Yeah, yeah.
Which in part kind of sounds like their ancestors. Like, don't drink. Okay, we won't drink. But at least they obeyed. And God's like, can you recognize this for a moment?
I'm going to honor that, right.
But yeah, just to, God, like, every once in a while, I think he, in a loving way, slaps us upside the head. And that's what Jesus did too all along, because the disciples had latched onto ideologies which has a resemblance, maybe might be a distorted reflection of what God was attempting to teach his people. And so just when we think we figured it all out, he'll come along and be like, no, you haven't.
Well, I think you see elements of this in the New Testament. You have Paul in Acts. In fact, I wrote down something to that regard with my little note here, that... these principles that God honors but still doesn't change that Jesus is the only way. And so what a great conversation to have, the modern day conversation with people of other faiths. Mm-hmm. And also people who are just like moral people. Mm-hmm. God honors their actions and invites them to be followers of him. Mm-hmm. And you have that in Acts where Paul is talking about the unknown God, this idol they have to the unknown God. He's like, perfect. I'm going to tell you about the one you don't know that is the God. You have this with Jesus, actually, the woman at the well.
Mm-hmm.
He shouldn't have been there. It seems that he would have been there intentionally, that he, even in his mind, not just that God ordained it, in his also human side of him, I'm going to go this way that I shouldn't go, is out of the way to be there that day. And he is obviously associated with her. He shouldn't have been. He's teaching something to the Jews.
Yeah.
But he also has that boundary with her. She says something about where to worship, and he's like, you have it wrong on where to worship. But pretty soon you're going to be able to worship from anywhere.
Right.
And so it's clearly like there, yes, there is a way. I don't want to acknowledge like, oh yeah, your path of clearly, even in the original thing I read, Baal, the idol of Baal is not he's not saying cool, great job with that. He's not saying that. But in principles of how maybe another religion treats their family or, you know, I've heard this a lot. I watch a lot of apologetic stuff, a lot of different things. And when people talk to Latter-day Saints, the Mormon church, one thing that is so applauded and rightfully so is their community.
Mm-hmm.
What a beautiful community.
Yeah.
They're pro-family. They are, they help each other in need. They're baking all the time, which is super awesome. And there is such things like that in probably any aspect of life of a moral nature to be able to complement and even learn from. I think there's the humility in it to learn from it as well.
To affirm what's affirmable.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's our start. That should be our start with people.
That's right.
Because if you go in like a mama bear protecting your theology, to me, then something has shifted. Maybe yours is more of an ideology, because you're not being the hands and feet of Jesus in that moment, because that's not what Jesus did. His approach was different.
Sure.
And so I do fairly remember your story. And
you've read through the Bible a couple of times, but how many times do you think you've ever heard a pastor reference that?
I don't think I've ever heard anybody reference that. But there's so many of those kinds of stories sprinkled throughout the Old Testament.
Yeah.
Where it almost sounds, and some could call it contradictory, because I just read over in this chapter, don't associate with that. In fact, anybody, like if you read in the book of Ezra was very much a stickler when it came to, hey, you guys are coming back now into Jerusalem. We're establishing the temple. It's got rebuilt. Nehemiah comes in and builds the wall. So we're getting back to where we should be, right? Mm-hmm. But all of you have now intermarried with people. And instead of asking God, like they feel like, because this is what we read and we feel like we should just literally lift from this. This is what you said back in the day.
Yeah.
Instead of returning to God, say, God, does this please you? We have moved on. We've moved on. And in fact, you talked about this last week with Jeremiah, in that we want you to now be a part of the community that has taken you over.
Sure. Sure.
And so it's like, well, okay, well, how does that work out? If you're now becoming a part of the community, you're praying as a part of the community, young boys in Jewish culture now are marrying young girls of another culture because they're becoming a part of the community. Is that still frowned upon? And for Ezra and the leaders there, they just determined, if you intermarried, divorce them now. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty brutal. And there was no asking of God. And I think constantly Jesus would shift people and say, wait, there was a reason why God laid down the law. And the spirit of where you're at right now has nothing to do. Don't call fire and lightning down from them to smite that city. You don't know what the spirit you're acting out of, right? That's not mine.
Well, I think, too, you have this in the Old Testament. And this would sound rude if I said this about another person. Mm-hmm. But because God has the authority to do it, I'm going to say this about him, and I just think it's true. You have really these references of God saying, I do what I want. Mm-hmm. And I, if I could flip right to it, because I'm God. And obviously that'd be rude about another person, because we should have humility. We're not God.
Yes.
I wish I could flip to it right now. I can't remember which chapter it is, but it even answers some of those questions of, God, you said you were going to destroy them, and then you didn't. Mm-hmm. And he actually clarifies that in somewhere, Jeremiah, maybe it's around Jeremiah 20, I can't remember. But it's like, if I said I'm going to destroy a nation— and then they turn from their ways, and I choose not to, I can do that.
Yeah.
If I said I'm going to bless them, but then they start being evil, I can destroy them. Yeah. Like, I can do that.
Yeah.
I think overall, though, is what it made me, it's not just about complimenting somebody of another faith. It's about having the humility that I don't have it all together, mm-hmm. and also not completely vilifying. Because, I mean, one that we've lightly mentioned before, but, you know, Islam. Mm-hmm. Islam is not the true way. There's a lot of contradictions there that we could, if we were going to do an apologetics episode, we could certainly get into it. But it is vilified, I mean, even because of what we were talking about earlier, you know, mm-hmm. with the association with September 11th, that we're certainly extremists. But if you read certain parts of the Quran, there is an ideology in some of those verses that it seems like that's there. But if you live next door to somebody that is Muslim, I want to treat them on an interpersonal basis.
Authentically.
I don't want to just vilify everything about them.
Yeah.
And certainly I think here we have this—
Or pretend that we're in agreement on everything.
Or pretend that we're in agreement. That's a good one too.
Authenticity. Yeah.
And so I think that's that lesson. It's Jeremiah, I may have not mentioned it. It's Jeremiah 35. If you want to read that really random story where God is honoring somebody that wasn't even originally honoring him, but he has invited them into the fold as we can do as well with anybody of an ideology, of a different religion, and go, this is great. I've learned from you here, but let me tell you about the one true God.
Yeah. You just made me think of Balaam. There's another prophet in scripture who was actually more of a wizard / sorcerer / you give me money enough, I'll tell you what you need to know.
Mm-hmm.
And he was used by God.
Yeah, right.
There's lots of examples. And so if I ever, again, try to fasten a box to put our God in, I'll be sorely disappointed. So that's why not everything's a feel-good story when you read the Bible. But it does tell us in Scripture that every good and perfect gift is from him. And if he decides yes or no, I can trust him with whatever that decision is. But because I can't even trust my own feelings some days.
Sure, sure.
And if we talked about that, where do we land every time? A firm foundation where he's never shifting like sand.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Thank you. This is the Anything But Quiet Time podcast. Again, if you are listening, you didn't catch it earlier, and you haven't switched over to video, you can text the word quiet to the number 893-893 and leave a comment about content or shirts. There it is.